This is my favourite Elliott Smith song. This podcast is all about trying to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. Now, we're currently out of season, but a couple of things have happened that have made us want to come out of hibernation very briefly. One is that we co-hosted an amazing Elliott Smith charity tribute night with our friends Kalebo and Second Phase Collective. And at that show, two of our former guests, Charlie Barnes, who joined us in season 7, and Will Taylor of Flight, who joined us in season 6, played. And we'll bring you songs that each of them played a little bit later on. But before we do that, I want to talk about the other thing that happened. And that's that an amazing Elliott Smith biography was published back in August. The book is called Nobody Broke Your Heart, and it's a really comprehensive look at Elliott's life, his music, and the legacy he leaves behind. It's currently out in the US with publication in the UK set for September. Recently, I interviewed Jamie Fisher, the author of the book, for the podcast. And this interview I'm going to play is in two parts. First, you'll hear Jamie talking about her favourite Elliott Smith song. Then we'll have a short break where we'll hear a track from our recent tribute night. Then we'll have the second half of the interview with Jamie where we go deeper into the book. So let's get going then. This is the writer Jamie Fisher talking to me from Portland.
I'm Jamie Fisher. I'm a writer. I'm a researcher for the New York Times Magazine, and I'm based in Portland now. I loved so many of Elliott's songs that this was really difficult. And what I ended up doing was picking a song that I love that I didn't really go into too much detail about in the book. And it's Angelus. What's wonderful about so many of Elliott's songs is how well form matches function. And Angelus is a beautiful example. This song about an industry that's glittering and beguiling on the surface, and then you scratch at that a bit, and underneath it's very dark. And the form of the song is just like that. It's mesmerizing, it's beautiful, and then you start to pay attention to the lyrics. For a long time, when I was miserable or when a friend was miserable, I would send them or Angelus, and you know, Angelus is kind of like dunking your head in the light from a stained glass window. Like, you know, Pizzola is like, I get it, I've been there. And Angelus is like, it's going to be okay. Things are terrible, but remember how much beauty people are capable of.
Yeah. I think in your book, you say that the seductive patterns of the finger picking, the softness of his voice make as many promises as Angelus does with its poisoned arms. So what do you mean by that? Do you mean it's sort of like the promises are in some way, there's like a, it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a song, it's fundamentally a song about the industry, and it makes promises to you that are so seductive, and it's not going to keep them, and it's probably going to damage you. You know, it's a story that we see repeated over and over. And Elliott was really aware of that. He was very wise to that, even if it wasn't ultimately protective in the way you might hope. Someone's always coming around here, trailing some new kill. Says I seen your picture on a $100 bill. What's a game? A chance to hear him as one of real skill. So glad to meet you.
When you do talk about the song in the book, you talk about it with Rose Melberg, who is a musician who toured with Elliott in the 90s. She was there when he was practicing it, or he was writing it, and he was kind of like developing it as he was touring the previous album. This is on Either Or, the previous album, the self-titled record. Can you share some of the things that the Rose shared with you for the book?
Oh, wow. So Rose was touring with him, you know, early in 1996. And so she saw him working on Angelus. And so, you know, she was touring with him as part of the Softies, and her partner in the Softies, Jen, actually got a picture of Elliot, you know, sitting on this old gas pump in this swamp in Louisiana, working on Angelus. It's this beautiful white, black and white picture that's included in the book. And it was just like, you know, it's one of those songs where you can't imagine that it didn't exist before or that it wasn't complete before. It's just like, it must have existed. It must have like sprung from the head of Zeus, like Athena. Or so it was just like, it was just so awe-inspiring to hear her talk about it. You know, it was just beautiful. And what she described was seeing him, you know, always having to pull over on the road to do interviews on the phone, and how Elliot had explained to her that the song was about the record industry and what fame can do to you. And so she had this window into watching the beginning of it that was sort of fascinating for her.
Picking up the ticket shows there's money to be made. Go on, lose the gamble, that's the history of the trade. Did you add up all the cards left to play? To zero and sign up with evil Angela.
Aaron Espinosa is another one who was there as well, as Angelus was being written and then I think recorded
oh,
as well.
Oh no, Aaron. Oh, you're thinking of Aaron Day.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No problem. Yeah. So Aaron and Elliot were both really interested in capturing a particular kind of sound that Aaron called like the fat tape sound, you know, from the 60s, really rich, lush sound. And so they were doing these experiments together in Aaron's basement, basically. And they never really got there, you know, and they recorded a few things like early versions of Bottle Up and Explode together. But he got this beautiful window into the way that Elliot worked and the way that sometimes he was explaining to me that sometimes what Elliot wanted was just to get the sort of the after image or the suggestion of a sound. And he told me this beautiful story about sitting outside with Elliot on a hot summer night, and they were drunk and a little high. And Elliot was talking about how he wanted to just sort of scrape away the actual organ from the song and leave behind just the ghost of an organ. And he tilted his head back and said, you know, I just wanted to sound like stars. And that was such a magical moment because Aaron didn't remember offhand what song that was going to be, but I recognized that it was Angelus. Because there's this organ in the background that always sounded to me like this spar that was like faint and shining. And the timeline matched up. And it was just this wonderful moment where an artist had wanted to communicate something that was suggested very subtly. And knowing that at least on the other end, like years later, at least one person had heard it. That was really magical.
Don't start me trying.
The other thing that you mentioned in your book about Angelus that stood out to me, which I hadn't really considered before, was it's Angelus, Pictures of Me, and Rose Parade. Which I think the three songs on either or you describe as, I think, being like the backbone of the album, the three songs that kind of relate to Elliot's relationship with fame.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
So do you see those three as like a kind of almost like a package together?
I definitely see them as variations on a theme. There are certain, I mean, either or is like a perfect album, right? But there are certain songs on it that just sort of pair together really well. I mean, that's part of why it works so well. It's sifting through these different themes and coming back to them and turning them over and then reconsidering them again.
Is the album your favorite Elliot album, or is it possible for you to have a favorite album?
It's probably one of my favorites. It's really hard to say. I actually, you know, I know that for some people, Basement is hard to listen to, but I really do love Basement a lot too.
Hmm.
Which I guess makes sense because a lot of the songs had their genesis in the Either Or era, right?
Hmm.
Like, you know, Coast to Coast goes back to 95 or 96, which is also about fame. You know, you can take that package deal as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And one thing that kind of stood out to me when I was reading your book, like the fact that Coast to Coast, you know, as you say, originated so much further back than the 2000s. And like similarly, I think you talk about how Elliot develops his lyrics over time, and, you know, spend years sometimes honing them, changing a pronoun, for example, and just like delving so deep into the details that I guess like lots of his songs, although they may have been released at a certain point in time, that they have originated so much further back.
Yeah, yeah. The Basement is really interesting because a lot of people think about it as like, you know, this is what he was thinking in like the last couple years of his life. And it's like, well, so many of these songs go further back than that. Most of those songs are years older. So it's sort of like, you know, when you look up at the sky and you see a star shining, like, you know, you're seeing the star the way it existed like a million years ago or whatever. Mm. You know, I don't understand the exact, the exact chronology. But, you know, it's like by the time the light reaches you, time has already passed. What I found was ultimately like of the songs that were included in the released version of Basement, I mean, one of the only songs that I couldn't find written further back was Little One. You know, all the other songs were at least 3 years older or more.
And were there other songs on other albums that where you found similar things? And I think, you know, some of even the stuff that he wrote as a teenager finds its way into later material as well.
One of my favorite experiences was getting to listen to this this early piano line that Elliot must have recorded in college, possibly a little bit earlier. I think the tape is undated, but it's recognizably Sweet Adeline. And you realize how long you'd been holding on to these things. Like, oh, okay, so this goes back at least 10 years. And he was thinking about it, and he wasn't going to use it until he was ready.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. It's amazing. And I mean, we can dig a bit deeper into the book in a little bit, but it'd be good to hear more about you and your kind of your personal relationship to Elliot's music. So tell us, when did you first become an Elliot Smith fan?
Okay, so I don't know how many people have listened to Seth Abbott and Jessica Lee Mayfield's covers album.
Yes, yes. We had them as actually a guest together on this podcast.
Oh, that's great. I'll have to go back and listen.
Years ago. I think it's probably like 2017 or 2018. So yeah, I'm familiar with the album, yeah.
Yeah, so the album had come out a couple years before you spoke to them. And that was my first time ever hearing his music. You know, for reasons I get into in the book, he wasn't really played on the radio. And I was only 12 when he died. And I just never had an opportunity to hear his music. And so the first time I heard it was filtered through their voices. And so for a while, I was just listening to their interpretations of his songs. And then I shifted gradually from there into listening to Elliot. And then it sort of switched from being a casual fan to being more more devoted during the pandemic. You know, I was in New York then and things were so grim, and I would just be like walking around Prospect Park with my mask on, listening to Elliot during the afternoons, and kind of keeping sane that way and digging further into the bootlegs and unreleased songs. And then it reached a certain point where I thought, well, you know, I've listened so much to his music. I feel like I know so much about him. Maybe this is when I should check out a biography. And I was just really surprised that the biographies that were out there didn't seem to capture aspects of him that I could hear just from listening to the music.
Mm.
You know, whether it's like the themes in his songs or the way that he speaks when he's on stage and how funny and silly he is. I kept a file for a long time that was just funny crowd interactions. not all, most of which did not make it into the book. But he was just so funny. You know, someone requests Freebird, and he says, "You should be very careful. That's a long song." You know, go for it. If you threaten him with Freebird, and so I felt that there was still a lot left to explore. And one of the things that suggested that to me is that not many people had talked about him in those books. You know, not many people had been interviewed. And I think that was largely because people weren't ready. Mm. You know, I was talking to a lot of these people 20 years or more after he died, and it was still really raw for a lot of people, you know, his loss, tragic losses like that. And so sort of finally enough time had passed that it was possible to talk to more people and to round out this picture of his life.
I can make you satisfied in everything you do. All your secret wishes could right now be coming true. Be forever with my poison arms around you. No one's gonna fool around with us. No one's gonna fool around with us. So glad to meet you, Angela.
So that's the first part of our interview with Jamie. We'll bring you the second half in a few minutes, but before that, I wanted to have a quick break and play you this. This is Will Taylor from Flight playing Coming Up Roses at our recent tribute night in London.
Coming up roses everywhere.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that little interlude there from Will. Now let's get back to part two of our interview with Jamie Fisher.
What do you think makes your book different from the other biographies that have come before?
I think partly it's that fullness. You know, Elliot did not leave an archive behind. There's a wonderful recorded archive. There is not an archive of writing. You know, if you look at the things that he left behind that I was able to like gather pictures of from people, it's like a song that he threw out that got taken out of a waste bin. Some papers he left at the bottom of a van.
Yeah.
Like CVS receipts. And a printout of his bank account, a song he wrote on the back of a paper plate for some reason, you know? And it's like, it's not this like comprehensive archive that you would expect from someone who is as literate as Elliot. And it's not, you know, gathered in one place and publicly accessible. So ultimately, to get a full picture of his life, you need to talk to people. You need to sort of reconstruct it from oral history. And so that's part of what makes the book different. It's just so full, in part because he had many different, you know, sides of himself and many different aspects of his personality. And so each person you talk to has a slightly different window into who he was, which is pretty magical. The other big difference is that with the exception of a 3 1/3 book on XO, there really haven't been books on Elliot that are focused on the music, whether that's the lyrics or the recording process or the genesis of some of the songs. So this is the first book that sort of takes his art as seriously as his life.
And you, I think, ended up speaking to 140 different people, which is a lot. I've never written a book, but that sounds like quite a lot of people. How did your like vision of what you thought you were going to write change as you spoke to all of these, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Different people.
So I initially was going to write something much more restrained. Like, by restrained, I just mean like, I was thinking much more of like, oh, you know, like a short book that focuses on the lyrics and explores his life through these different themes in the lyrics. Because I hadn't really seen a study of his lyrics. You know, it wasn't going to be academic, but I realized that I'd thought about the lyrics a lot more than a lot of people think about the lyrics.
Is that because you're a writer that you are drawn particularly to the words, or is it something else?
Yeah, I think it's that. And I think it's, you know, I don't know. I was just interested in unpacking them. They're these beautiful little puzzle boxes. And I think that you know, there are some people who sort of dismiss things that they don't understand as not having meaning or being confusing. And if you dig into Elliot's lyrics, everything is really very intentional. You know, everything is there if you want to find it. So I was really drawn to that. But I'm also the kind of person who can't really listen to a song without paying attention to the lyrics, to the point where if the lyrics are dumb, I'm like, oh, man. I don't know if I like this song as much anymore.
Me too. Yeah. That's the kind of perspective that I come from it at as well. Like, Oasis, for example, for me.
Or like,
no offense to any Oasis fans, but
No, and it's funny too, because one of the things I learned while I was working on this is that Elliot loved R.E.M., but he would get so frustrated with the lyrics sometimes because the music would be so beautiful and the Michael Stipe sometimes would just throw like gobbledygook over it and he would get so frustrated.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And that, I mean, one of the reasons that I love Elliot Smith is the lyrics are so good.
They're so good. They're thoughtful, they're poetry. You know, there's a song called Echo Park that's never come out because he was unsatisfied with how he was using the word the. I forget the question at this point.
Well, I think originally we were talking about how your kind of vision of your book changed as you...
Oh, yeah,
you
sorry.
You spoke to more and more and more. Because presumably when you set out to write it, did you think you would end up being able to speak to that number of people?
No, absolutely not. No, so that was part of what changed the idea of the book. Enough people started talking to me and enough people who really, you know, mattered in Elliot's life and hadn't spoken before, whether it was his sister Rachel or his sister Ashley or his girlfriend Joanna, I realized, oh, I sort of have a responsibility now. You know, I don't know how many of these people are going to speak to someone again.
Mm.
And so I felt like, you know, I was kind of overwhelmed, but I felt like I need to try to get this right or close to right.
Then, like, you obviously have access to so much archive material as well, which lots of other people don't. And the first book, I think, am I saying the first biography of Elliot Smith that has that level of access? How was there a point in the process where that sort of like you realized that this was going to become a thing and this could add, you know, clearly so much texture and a kind of a level of richness to the book that you wouldn't be able to have otherwise?
Yeah, so it was all basically collected bit by bit. Like the recorded archive, you know, parts of it were eventually shared with me by Larry Crane. So that was sort of in one piece. And when I heard I was going to get to listen to, you know, unreleased songs and demos, I was incredibly excited. I think that was back in 2023. And that was, you know, I knew then that the book would be special in that way, that I would get to share these songs with people and get to write about them. And then the written archive, you know, it's not really in one place. So it was collected bit by bit from people. And it wasn't really until close to the end that I realized I did have a fair amount of material. You know, again, it's just like scattered people who have held on to this or held on to that, or, you know, or Elliot like left something behind with them in New York. And sometimes it was getting to see the material directly, and sometimes like it was just hearing about it secondhand because people, you know, did feel very protective and private about it. So, you know, so with the recorded archive, I did have a big moment like, oh, wow, this looks great. And with the sort of print archive that I cobbled together, you know, not so much. It was more like individual discoveries, like, oh, my God, it's a set list and I don't know this song.
Was there anything that like really surprised you about that you learned about Elliot as you worked on this, that there was maybe a conception you had of him at the beginning that changed when you spoke to more and more people?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about any book, I think, and I say this having written one book, right? But, you know, it's my experience from writing articles too, is that you have to go in and have your ideas changed. You know, you start out with something and it's like this block of marble and you have to be prepared for things to chisel at it, you know, until you have the new shape. So yeah, you know, my idea of Elliot did change, and it's hard to put my finger on it because what I had before was just kind of this like ideal, but a lot of things were fundamentally the same, you know. He was gentle, he was sweet, he was funny. I think I didn't even realize how smart he was, you know, like you just hear more and more stories and you're just like, wow, he was brilliant. You know, he was brilliant on an intellectual level in so many ways and not just in the music. I hadn't realized how skilled he was on the production side of things. You know, he wasn't just someone who would write the song and then not know how to execute it. He absolutely knew how to execute it on every level, from like where to adjust the mic, you know, to instrumentation. He had this vision in his head that he just would pluck out and put on tape.
And it seemed like he had, from just reading what's in your book, he seemed like he had that from a relatively early age as well. Right? This like curiosity about how things were put together. He didn't just like appreciate and enjoy stuff. He was like, it seemed like he really wanted to know how something was made.
Yeah, there's this interview where he's like, you know, some people like, you know, want to take apart cars to know how they work. And, you know, as a kid, I just wanted to take apart songs.
Yeah, he would have loved like the Song Exploder podcast or
something like that. Yeah, I think he would have loved that. I think he would have loved that. So there's a lot of stuff I go around thinking, oh, Elliot would have loved that.
Thanks very much to Jamie for joining us on the show. And I really do recommend giving the book a read. It's really, really good. That's pretty much it from me today. Thank you very much for listening to this bonus episode of My Favourite Elliot Smith Song. To play us out, first you'll hear Charlie Barnes playing I Figured You Out at our London tribute show. Then we close with Waltz Number 1 from our friends Sea Dog and Belza, who joined us actually at our London tribute show back in 2023. See you very soon.
Used to be the one you always ignore. When somebody wants you, I've seen it before. You're every kind of color, there ain't nothing that you won't claim. Your ambition and promise, and your addiction to fame. Everyone has a dollar sign after their name. When somebody wants you, you treat them just the same. So go on and pick up. You don't care what poison you choose or what person you lose. Should have been me, yeah. Shouldn't it be a crushing quiet blows in through your window to someone who wants you? Never know. I'll pick up around you, clear everything out, leave you where I found you. I figured you out, leave you where I found you. I figured you out.
Thank you very much, everyone. Have a lovely evening.